Happy to be filling in for Evan on this Monday, 15th of December. Brent Laux with you. I'm here through the course of the morning. Evan will be back in the chair here tomorrow. We were talking about heat pumps and other energy-producing items on our last segment, and I had a number of texts in from people. And, you know, we were saying over the years, there's different technologies kind of come and go. And I just threw it out there. I said, anybody have experience with geothermal? Because, you know, you go back to the 90s or so, and I know driving around rural Saskatchewan, you'd see signs up for companies that offered geothermal. And I just wondered, you know, you heard a lot about it 20 or 30 years ago, and I just hadn't heard much about it. I'm guessing it's still out there. One of our listeners, Kevin, texted in saying, I've got two neighbors on the farm that went geothermal 15 years ago. One guy's already replaced it with a propane boiler as he didn't like it. He said it couldn't keep up in cold weather. And his other neighbor said he simply wishes he wouldn't have gone with the geothermal, prefers he would have gone with a different system as it doesn't work as well as they thought it was going to. And that's a big investment, isn't it? You know, it's no different. People spend $20,000 on a solar array on top of their house or their shop or in their yard, whatever it may be. You want that payback at some point, and you want to be able to turn on the heat when it's bitter cold. If the geothermal apparently not working for some of these people to the level that they thought. 1-877-332-TALK, 1-877-332-8255. Okay. All this heavy, dark news today, you know, the horrific terror attack in Australia, university shootings in the United States, the death, the murder now, it turns out, of Rob Reiner and his wife. Their son has now been taken into custody. Okay, we know that's out there and it's in your brain. So let's have a bit of a positive distraction. Let's go fishing with Jason Matady. Jason, well-known Saskatchewan fisher guy, and he joins us this morning to talk a little bit about ice fishing. Hi, Jason.
Good morning, Brent.
So do you do this as a full-time gig, being a fisherman?
Well, you know, I guess that is always the dream, but I get out as often as I can and really, really enjoy not just catching fish, but just the fresh air, being outdoors, and taking in Mother Nature's good vibes and medicine.
Absolutely. And, you know, I often find looking at social media these days, for those of us that grew up on the prairies, we know how it works. But with all the newcomers we have coming, I often see people will say, we'd like to try fishing. Where's a good place? Or I'd like to try ice fishing. I've never done it before. What do I need? So I thought we could maybe start off with a little bit of the basics on ice fishing. I guess the first question I have, and you would know being the fisherman you are, is a summer hotspot for fish going to be a hotspot in the winter when I dig a hole through that ice there?
You know, the wonderful yet frustrating part of fishing is it could be yes and it could be no. Because sometimes, you know, like the bottom line, like us, even though I don't want to make too many comparisons between warm-blooded humans and cold-blooded fish, but they will go where there's shelter and where there's food, mm-hmm. like we do. So if the food and the shelter, the cover, the trees, the rocks, or wherever the fish like to hang out and find their favorite food, if the food hangs out there in the winter and the summer, then yeah, it's probably going to be a decent spot.
And again, I haven't done any ice fishing for a long, long time, and I know the technology, just like open water fishing, has provided so many new ways for you to find fish. So when you go ice fishing, what do? You cut a hole in the ice, and have you got a sonar machine or something that you stick down there to see what you're looking at?
Absolutely. I mean, lots of different models of fish finders come in ice configuration, shall we say, which is basically a handheld model where you've got your screen, you've got like a puck-like transducer that goes in the hole as opposed to something that goes out the back of the boat. Lots of the things on the market now in terms of the fish finders have what are called all seasons, so they've got different transducers. You can configure it for your boat in the summer and for ice fishing. So generally what we do is and the best way to get started is, first of all, you got to get yourself an auger. If it has a motor on top of it, even better, because It's a very physical thing to cut a hole in the ice,
yep.
as you might imagine, especially when you're like me and my brother Jeff, the other half of yetfishing.ca, where we like to turn the lake into Swiss cheese and go find the fish, particularly you know, when it's mild. You know, we want to go stay out and enjoy the outdoors. So you basically cut from about 5 feet out to like 25 feet and off of what we call classic structure. So near points, inside turns, bays, that type of thing. And cover, literally cover water like you would in the summertime. And generally, you're going to find some fish in there. Now, it depends also on the time of day. I mean, everybody's favorite fish, the walleye, tends to be in most lakes, not all, but most lakes, very active in the morning as the sun comes up and very active when the sun goes down. So those are also key points. But what can give it away, especially if you have a fish finder, is that often you'll see fish present. They'll follow your lure up and down, but they won't strike it. That's an indication that it could be a fish that is either already eaten and they're full, or they're a fish that's interested and will eat later when the light conditions are right. So that's what a fish finder can also tell you is it'll help you find fish, but the next part is triggering them and getting to bite for sure.
We're talking ice fishing with Jason Manatee, a Saskatchewan fishing expert, and I'm sure you're well aware of Fishing Booker. They're this big online platform, and they recently named Tobin Lake and Last Mountain Lake as two of the top places in all of Canada to do ice fishing. Would you agree with their assessment?
You know, those are two excellent lakes in Saskatchewan. I mean, considering we have over 100,000 of them, they can all be excellent at different times. It's really kind of what you're after. If you're after giant walleyes, absolutely. Those two are probably among the best in the province. Diefenbaker is another one. Lac La Ronge is another one. You know, we could fill a half hour telling you the best lakes to go. You know, Buffalo Pound, Blackstrap near Saskatoon, excellent for perch. If you're into getting some bites for the kids, and I strongly recommend if you're going out for the first time, target a smaller fish, target a fish that's more numerous, because everybody just wants the rod to bend. Everybody who says, oh, we went out, we had a good time, and the rod didn't bend. That'll work maybe once, particularly if it's mild. But if you go out two or three times and you don't catch anything, you're out, you're done. So that's really, really important is keying in on those smaller fish, and you do that by using smaller lures. You know, those smaller fish eat smaller things, and they tend to bite those smaller things.
So another way to find fish, of course, is just show up at the lake and look where all the huts are gathered. Is that a safe way to figure, well, at least people are catching fish there when you see 50 huts all gathered around?
Well, you know, that's certainly a spot where people believe it to be, you know, a congregating area of fish,
for sure.
And the nice thing is if you go to where there's shacks, and you introduce yourself, tell people what you're up to, you're going to meet somebody who's nice and friendly. They're going to show you a little bit of the ropes and show you some lures that work, show you some lures that you want to focus on, you know. And really, that's kind of what it comes down to, is trying to work into the community a little bit. And I'd also like to throw out a wonderful plug to the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation, who has memberships across the province for sale. You can join a local membership, and people will take you under their wing and say, hey, you know, I know you're new to Canada or you're new to Saskatchewan. We're going fishing. Why don't you join us? And you're going to learn so much from other people with that experience.
What a great idea. Boy, that's so nice that they're offering that. So I'm all about comfort the older I get, Jason.
I get it.
I'm going to go out on a lake on a cold winter day, so I need a shack. But I don't want just a shack. What are some of the goodies I should be stocking my shack with or outfitting it with to make that day all the more comfortable?
Well, now, the nice thing is I've got a few different options, as you might imagine for me. I've got everything from a one-man pop-up tent that literally sits like a flat little tent that's probably, you know, 4x3 that I can throw on a sled, throw everything on top, and haul it out.
Yep.
I pop it up. It's got a hole in the floor. It's got a seat, and it fits one guy. And that allows me to get out of the wind, get out of the elements, and just drag my shack from hole to hole and still be portable. I've also got what they call pop-ups, where essentially this tent has folding sides that pop out. I've got a four-man. I've got we even now have a seven-man, and meaning that, or seven-person, I should say, that allows that number of people in. So that's it. Really comes down to if you still want to have that portability, and you don't want to have the challenge of hauling a permanent shack out there that is an actual, you know, wood structure, whatever the case is. Because to do that, it's the most comfortable, absolutely. It will protect you. You put it in a little wood stove, away you go. But certain things happen over the course of the winter season that if you don't pay attention, you're going to be in a little bit of trouble. And what happens is that heavy shack draws a little bit of, like, it'll push down on the ice a little bit. Water will come up. It'll freeze into the ice. And if you don't periodically move it so it doesn't happen, your shack's going to be well frozen into the ice in the spring, and you are going to be chipping and chipping and chipping for hours to try to get it out. So, and you got to have a 4x4 truck to get out there, that type of thing. Whereas if you go with these portable options, like I discussed earlier, all you need is a set of legs that we presumably most of us hopefully have, and a sled, and you throw it all on the sled, and you can walk back and forth from the shore out into the lake.
You were talking about the auger, and I remember years ago I had a gas-powered Jiffy, but nowadays I know you can get electric ones. Have you got a preference? Are you manual, gas, electric for the auger?
100% electric. The nice thing about electric is if you charge your batteries, they always start. They're amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
They're quieter. You can go inside a shack, cut a hole, and don't smoke yourself out with carbon monoxide. That's the other nice thing. Most of them have a reversible feature on them and variable speed, so you can slowly cut and reopen holes, like if you're in a permanent shack, because the old ones would jump and skip and almost, you know, injure your arms trying to reline the hole to recut it and jam at the bottom. So you can just slowly work that through. And they also have a reverse feature, which is very important because it'll actually, if you kick it in reverse after you cut the hole, you can kick all the slush down the hole, and it'll shoot it down under the ice and actually clean your hole for you. So if you can afford it, you know, definitely are something you need to tell your spouse and the people buying Christmas gifts. You've got the budget this year, hon, but I totally recommend the electric option. And then the last part of the electric auger option is they have many, many smaller diameter, like 6-inch, even up to 8-inch diameter augers that fit on a drill. Like if you've got your drill from the shop, a cordless drill that's got enough torque.
Really?
You can also punch a hole through the ice that way. And for a lot of people, that is the best budget way to do it, because you just got that, you know, cordless drill just sitting in the garage with the batteries freezing at this time and you're not doing anything potentially. So you may as well work those batteries, and that's another more economical way to get yourself an electric auger.
That's some good information for, be it first-timers or people maybe just planning to head out ice fishing and thinking about some different gear. Okay, Jason, I'll let you go with that. What's your favorite place in all of Saskatchewan to go ice fishing, either for the fish or for the scenery?
Oh boy, that's a tough one because I love so many of the places. I would say probably my favorite is where I grew up in eastern Saskatchewan, Round Lake in the Qu'Appelle Valley. There's about two or three Round Lakes in Saskatchewan, so I needed to tell you which one it was. And the reason is that's where my love affair with fishing happened. That's where I caught my first big walleye and my first big pike. And there's just sort of something about the beauty of the Qu'Appelle Valley. And it's a little quieter out there, you know, a little farther away from the city. And we're so fortunate, Brent, in this province to have amazing fishing everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's a piece of my heart that will always be part of the Qu'Appelle Valley.
Nicely said, Jason. Thanks for your time, and have a great ice fishing season this winter.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Take care. Jason Mattity, talking fishing, ice fishing, on the Evan Bray Show. Brent Laux with you, filling in today. Evan's back tomorrow. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Boy, I could use a change as far as our news lineup is concerned. What a dark day with the details coming out, of course, from Australia and the mass shooting, the terror attack in Sydney at the Bondi Beach Hanukkah celebrations that were going on there yesterday. This father and son duo begin shooting people, 15 dead, as many as 40 injured. Then we had a situation down in the U.S. as well, a college shooting, number of people wounded there, two were killed. And then this morning we also had the news of the death, the apparent murder now, it sounds, of Rob Reiner and his wife at their home in Hollywood, and their son has been arrested in connection with those deaths. And now we receive word today from the Mosaic Company here in Saskatchewan reporting the death early this morning at the K3 underground potash mine in Esterhazy. They say that it was a fatal injury due to a ground fall, the fall of ground, you know, where part of the roof or the side of the area of the mine collapsed. And so we've got the loss of a person's life, a young man, at the Esterhazy K3 potash mine with Mosaic. Condolences to that person's family, their co-workers, everybody that knew this person and that tragedy. It's rare that we have these situations occur at our potash mine, but no industry is perfect, and sadly things do happen. Our condolences once again. Coming up here on the Evan Bray Show, we have got a special guest that's going to join me in just a few minutes' time, a Saskatchewan-born tech developer. And what caught my eye about Sam Turner's work is this technology that he's working on to help us speak and communicate better. And in all my years in radio, I could always use a good help, right? But what he's done is he's been able to come up with this app, and he'll certainly get him to describe it more and how it works and how you can make use of it. But he said he really likes to help people when it comes to job interviews or maybe asking for a raise, or maybe you're in university and you have to defend a thesis, or you just want to communicate more confidently. Maybe you want to ask that person out for a date. So his app is called Lyra, L-I-R-A, and he says it's been put together to help people who have difficult conversations in a better and more effective way. I think we could all use that. So I know there's AI out there, ChatGPT, there's all these different artificial intelligence engines, if you can call them that, that people are making use of nowadays, and more people are using them for communication. So it'll be interesting to delve into what makes his Lyra app so different. And I want to know how easy it is to use, but I think that's a brilliant use of technology. And we look forward to having a conversation with him here coming up after the bottom of the hour. What did we have other good news here? Well, not good news yet. We'll see how this plays out for Regina City Council as they have started their budget deliberations today. We were talking to our reporter from the CJME newsroom who's going to be covering this. And I had originally thought this was about a 3-day thing, but he says no, council's actually set aside the entire week, the next 5 days if they need it, to get through these budget deliberations. As it stands for today, for the council budget meeting in Regina, they have 76 delegations, people, individuals, organizations, groups that want to be heard, and then another 7 individuals, groups signed up. They want to speak to the police portion of the Regina budget. This is a very important deal, though, because you look at the amount of money that they're looking at for a potential property tax increase. It would be upwards of over $400 per year for the average homeowner. And you look at Saskatoon, which had an increase of about $150 over the year. Moose Jaw settled their budget last week. Their increase amounts to about $140 per year for the average homeowner in Moose Jaw.